Mimi Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
We got to get that solved. Gaza is a tragic, it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. And he wants to get it solved, and I want to get it solved, and I think the other side wants to get it solved.
Will there be a ceasefire for Gaza? President Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu meet again on day 641 of Israel's assault on Gaza. We'll get the latest. Then to the other major U.S.-backed war, Ukraine. The U.S. has resumed military aid after cutting it off last week. We'll speak with Senator Bernie Sanders' former foreign policy advisor, Matt Duss. And a major lawsuit goes to trial this week, challenging the Trump administration attack on free speech on campus by arresting and detaining international students and professors who speak out on Palestinian rights.
We joined the lawsuit because we refuse to let Trump, Rubio, or anybody else use citizenship to divide and conquer us.
We'll speak with Jamil Jaffer, head of Columbia University's Knight First Amendment Institute. He's on the legal team. Then to Philadelphia, where the largest sanitation strike in a generation ended early this morning.
These members are citizens, first and foremost, of Philadelphia, and they service every aspect across this city and can't afford themselves to have any decent quality of life inside this city.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House for a second straight day Tuesday as Trump's Middle East envoy claimed Israel and Hamas are nearing a breakthrough on a ceasefire agreement. It's not clear what Trump and Netanyahu discussed behind closed doors, but Israeli media is reporting Netanyahu is under extreme pressure to reach a 60-day ceasefire deal that would see 10 living Israeli hostages released, along with the bodies of dead hostages, in exchange for the release of Palestinians held in Israeli prisons, many without charge. Hamas negotiators are also seeking the withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza, international guarantees for an end to the war, the resumption of humanitarian aid shipments overseen by the UN and the International Committee of the Red Cross, and an end to the operations of the U.S. Israeli-backed militarized aid group, the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, or GHF. Earlier today, hundreds of starving Palestinians in Gaza were forced to move toward the southern city of Rafah to search for food after GHF closed its only remaining aid distribution center in the central Gaza Strip. Palestinian officials say more than 770 people have been killed by Israeli forces and U.S. security contractors at sites run by GHF since it began operations in May. Meanwhile, Israeli attacks killed nearly 100 people across Gaza on Tuesday, as Palestinians awaited word on whether Israel would reach a ceasefire deal. Among the dead are displaced Palestinians torn to pieces when an Israeli missile struck a roundabout where the children were playing.
At that moment, children were playing on the swivel chairs here. Nearby stood a tent, the temporary shelter of a disabled man who wasn't affiliated with any faction. Then, tragically, the airstrike came without warning. We're all waiting for a ceasefire, but every delay brings new deaths. I could die. He could die. What exactly are they waiting for?
The United Nations Humanitarian Office warns fuel shortages caused by Israel's blockade have reached a critical point, with power for services including water desalination and hospitals' intensive care units rapidly running out. On Tuesday, the Palestinian Red Crescent Society announced it's closing the Al-Zaytun Medical Clinic in Gaza City after Israeli artillery shells struck nearby. The Red Crescent says it's the 18th time the group's been forced to close a clinic due to Israeli attacks and its blockade of medicine. This comes as Gaza health officials are warning of an alarming rise of meningitis cases among Gaza's children, with hundreds of cases reported in recent weeks. Lebanon's health ministry says an Israeli strike on a vehicle near the northern city of Tripoli killed at least three people and injured 13 others Tuesday in Israel's latest breach of its ceasefire with Lebanon. The Israeli military claimed the strike hit a key figure from Hamas, but did not identify the targets. Separately, Israel claimed it killed a Hezbollah commander in a drone strike on southern Lebanon Tuesday night. Meanwhile, Yemen's Houthi fighters have attacked another merchant vessel in the Red Sea, killing three sailors, wounding two others aboard a Liberian-flagged cargo ship. Tuesday's attack follows another Houthi strike on Sunday that sank a Liberian-flagged Greek-owned ship. All 22 crew members were rescued by a nearby ship responding to their distress call. The Houthis have vowed to continue attacking Red Sea shipping lanes until Israel ends its war on the Gaza Strip. The U.S. Supreme Court has cleared a path for the Trump administration to gut the federal workforce and eliminate entire federal agencies. On Tuesday, justices released an unsigned order from its shadow docket lifting lower court injunctions that blocked mass layoffs and the restructuring of federal agencies, even though Congress has not authorized those plans. In a dissenting opinion, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson called the court's lifting of the injunctions unfortunate, hubristic, and senseless, unquote. The American Federation of Government Employees, which represents some 820,000 federal workers, said in a statement, quote, "Today's decision has dealt a serious blow to our democracy and puts services that the American people rely on in grave jeopardy." In New Mexico, at least three people were killed by unprecedented flash floods Tuesday in the community of Ruidoso. Among the victims were children aged 4 and 7 who were swept downstream by the rushing floodwaters that saw the river rise to a record-breaking 20 feet. This comes as rescue teams in Texas are searching for over 170 people who've gone missing in the catastrophic floods of July 4th. The official death toll has climbed to at least 109 victims. Ukraine's Air Force says Russia launched its largest aerial attack overnight since its 2022 full-scale invasion of Ukraine, firing a record 741 drones and missiles, most of them targeting the city of Lutsk in western Ukraine. The barrage prompted Poland to activate its air defenses and scramble fighter jets. Russia's attack came after President Trump Tuesday sharply criticized Russian President Vladimir Putin, his latest in a series of U-turns on Ukraine policy.
You get a lot of bullshit thrown at us by Putin, for you want to know the truth. He's very nice all the time, but it turns out to be meaningless.
Trump said the U.S. would now send additional weapons to Ukraine after the Pentagon last week halted arms shipments. President Trump said he didn't know about that. We'll have more on Ukraine later in the broadcast with Matt Duss, former foreign policy advisor to Senator Bernie Sanders. The International Criminal Courts issued arrest warrants for two top Taliban leaders in Afghanistan on charges of committing gender-based persecution against women and girls. The court said in a statement, since regaining control of Afghanistan in 2021, the Taliban have, quote, specifically targeted girls and women by reason of their gender, depriving them of fundamental rights and freedoms, unquote. Women and girls have essentially been erased from public life in Afghanistan, including a Taliban-enforced ban on girls attending school beyond the sixth grade. The Taliban quickly rejected the arrest warrants issued against Sheikh Haibatullah Akhundzada and Taliban's supreme leader and Abdul Hakim Haqqani, Afghanistan's top justice official. The government of El Salvador has admitted to UN investigators the Trump administration controls the fate of nearly 140 Venezuelan immigrants transferred from the U.S. to the notorious CECOT mega prison. The report was issued in response to a UN inquiry indicating that El Salvador says it bears no legal responsibility for the men. The revelations directly contradict claims by Trump officials and Department of Justice lawyers who've repeatedly said they don't have jurisdiction or power to facilitate the return of the immigrants who were sent to El Salvador from the U.S. without due process. Immigrants jailed in Florida's new detention camp, dubbed Alligator Alcatraz, say conditions of their confinement are a form of torture. In a phone interview with CBS, immigrants describe being served maggot-infested food, a lack of access to water for sanitation, and the denial of medical care and religious rights. There have also been reports of flooding near electric cables. The detention camp was built in just 8 days at an abandoned airfield in the remote Everglades swamplands, with the first group of immigrants transferred there last week. The jail can hold up to 5,000 immigrants. Last week, a group of Democratic Florida state lawmakers said they were denied entry to the jail for an inspection. On Capitol Hill, House Democrats are demanding the release of all files related to the dead convicted sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein that also mentioned Donald Trump. A letter from 16 lawmakers accuses Attorney General Pam Bondi of withholding Epstein files that implicate Trump. They write, quote, "Stop protecting your boss." This comes after the Justice Department released a memo this week reiterating that Jeffrey Epstein died by suicide and claiming he did not keep a client list. That is a U-turn from Attorney General Bondi's previous statements, including this claim during a Fox News interview in February.
It's sitting on my desk right now to review. That's been a directive by President Trump. I'm reviewing that. I'm reviewing JFK files, MLK files. That's all in the process of being reviewed because that was done at the directive of the president from all of these agencies.
Jeffrey Epstein counted Presidents Donald Trump and Bill Clinton among his friends. In 2002, Trump told New York Magazine, quote, "I've known Jeff for 15 years. Terrific guy. He's a lot of fun to be with. It's even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side," unquote. On Tuesday, Trump angrily dismissed reporters' questions about Epstein during a cabinet meeting.
Are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein? This guy's been talked about for years. You're asking, we have Texas, we have this, we have all of the things. And are people still talking about this guy, this creep? That is unbelievable.
Swiss medical authorities have approved the first drug suitable to treat malaria in babies and very young children. 8 African countries that participated in clinical trials are now poised to approve the malaria treatment, which is dissolvable and can be mixed with breast milk, making it easy to administer. Malaria kills about 600,000 people worldwide each year, a majority of them children under the age of 5. A coalition of doctors and public health groups has sued Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. over changes to vaccine policy, which they say undermine public trust in vaccines. The complaint filed in a U.S. district court in Massachusetts accuses RFK Jr. of violating federal law by unilaterally altering COVID-19 vaccine recommendations without scientific evidence for children and people who are pregnant. The American Academy of Pediatrics called the move an assault on science, public health, and evidence-based medicine. The Academy's president, Dr. Susan Kressley, spoke in a video accompanying the lawsuit.
Because this wasn't just sidelining science. It's an attack on the very foundation of how we protect families and children's health. And the consequences could be dangerous. The American Academy of Pediatrics isn't standing by. We're stepping up. We're taking legal action because we believe children deserve better. We've published our own immunization schedule for decades, and we'll continue to do so because kids can't wait for politicians to sort this out.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House for a second straight day Tuesday, as Trump's Middle East envoy claimed Israel and Hamas are nearing a breakthrough on a ceasefire agreement. It's not clear what Trump and Netanyahu discussed behind closed doors, but Israeli media are reporting Netanyahu's under extreme pressure to reach a 60-day ceasefire deal that would see 10 living Israeli hostages released, along with the bodies of dead hostages, in exchange for the release of Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails. There are more Palestinian prisoners in jails than any time in a quarter of a century. Hamas negotiators are also seeking the withdrawal of Israeli forces, international guarantees for an end to the war, the resumption of humanitarian aid shipments overseen by the United Nations and the International Committee of the Red Cross, and an end to the operations of the U.S.-Israeli-backed militarized shadowy aid group, the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, known as GHF. Earlier today, hundreds of starving Palestinians in Gaza were forced to move toward the southern city of Rafah to search for food after GHF closed its only remaining aid distribution center in the central Gaza Strip. Palestinian officials say more than 770 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces and U.S. security contractors at sites run by GHF since it began operations in May. Back in Washington, D.C., Prime Minister Netanyahu is set to meet today with Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth at the Pentagon, and again at an event tonight featuring the heads of Jewish organizations, evangelical leaders, and senior administration officials. For more, we're joined in Washington, D.C. by Matt Duss. He's the executive vice president at the Center for International Policy and former foreign policy advisor to Senator Bernie Sanders. Matt, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you talk about carnage right now in Gaza, whether we're talking about starvation or Israeli bombing of civilians? Over the last few days, hundreds more have been killed. This as President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu meet in Washington, D.C., and there's discussion of a possible ceasefire. What do you know?
Yeah, I mean, as you said and you described, and we've all seen with our own eyes day after day, the destruction, the death, the suffering is unspeakable. And we can't allow it to simply fade into the background. This needs to end. It's unclear. You know, you said that there's pressure being put on Netanyahu by Trump. That may be true in terms of achieving a 60-day ceasefire. But what's important here is that pressure is sustained to turn this into a durable and permanent ceasefire. That's what was lacking in the ceasefire that was agreed earlier this year in January before Trump's inauguration. He put pressure on Netanyahu to agree to that temporary ceasefire. But then Netanyahu, of course, broke that ceasefire agreement and returned to the war because his interests and the interests of his government remain to make this a perpetual ongoing war. And that's what he's interested in.
So talk about the significance of this, third meeting of President Trump and Netanyahu since Trump became president once again. Talk about the meetings that have been held from Hegseth to Vance and what is being accomplished here and what you understand is happening between the negotiators in Doha, the Hamas and Israeli negotiators.
Sure. Well, I mean, of course, there's always, you know, engagement in meetings at multiple levels between multiple officials in the U.S. and Israeli government and in the region. I think what's one of the big focus of this meeting between Trump and Netanyahu, or this round of meetings, is to kind of try and take a victory lap, as they see it, after the war on Iran, which has paused for the moment. Israel launched its war a few weeks ago. In the midst of negotiations between the U.S. and Iran over its nuclear program, Trump eventually launched U.S. airstrikes on Iran's nuclear program. The actual impact of those strikes are still unclear, but clearly Netanyahu and Trump have an interest in promoting that as a massive success. The question is, as I said earlier, does this now translate into attention and focus and pressure from Trump on Netanyahu to get a ceasefire in Gaza? We've heard reports of the meetings in Doha, Qatar, between the U.S. and Israeli and Hamas officials and other negotiators, that they are getting closer. But the key sticking point remains Hamas's central demand that this agreement lead to a permanent ceasefire. And that is what Netanyahu has always resisted. There has been a deal on the table with this condition from very, very early in this war, from November of 2023. Netanyahu has consistently refused. And unfortunately, just from the public comments from Trump, it seems that Trump, like the Biden administration before him, is willing to give political cover to Netanyahu to pretend that he's actually interested in a real ceasefire when clearly he is not. This is a tool of pressure that the United States can and should use if it really wants to get a ceasefire, is to make clear publicly that Netanyahu is the problem here. He is the one refusing. There's enormous political pressure in Israel from hostages' families and friends, but not only from them, from the Israeli public more broadly, who are tired of this war and they want it to end. They want to get the hostages back. But that's something that Trump, unfortunately, still seems unwilling to say.
I want to go back to their first meeting on Monday. At that long table where Netanyahu presented Trump with a letter nominating him for the Nobel Peace Prize. Netanyahu also said he was working with the U.S. to find countries or a country that would take the Palestinians, claiming that they would be free to leave Gaza voluntarily. This is what he said.
I think President Trump had a brilliant vision. It's called free choice. You know, if people want to stay, they can stay. But if they want to leave, they should be able to leave. It shouldn't be a prison.
He repeatedly talked about Palestinians' freedom to choose. Can you talk about in the context of what is taking place in Gaza right now, the starvation, the bombings, the killings, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost indescribable how dishonest and disgusting that is from Netanyahu. First, let's step back. Let's understand that this is an accused war criminal who's under indictment from the International Criminal Court, which has issued a warrant for his arrest. So the fact that the president of the United States has welcomed him to the White House is a disgrace to the United States. Every American should feel ashamed and embarrassed about this. And for Netanyahu to nominate him for a Nobel Peace Prize is, you know, it's just another example of, you know, foreign leaders understanding that you need to flatter the president of the United States, this president of the United States, in order to get on his good side. But it's ultimately meaningless. I could nominate my ice cream man for a Nobel Peace Prize just as easily. But for Netanyahu to refer to Palestinians' free choice to leave, when you're facing constant violence, as Palestinians are, it is not a free choice to leave. If Palestinians had their choice, they would stay in Gaza. Gaza is their home. So to treat this as anything like voluntary is completely dishonest. And I'm actually, it's really outrageous to see it being reported this way, as if Palestinians are being given the option to continue to live among the rubble and the bombing and the starvation and the disease, or to transfer themselves. This is not in any sense voluntary. This is ethnic cleansing. Multiple human rights organizations and scholars globally have referred to this as a genocide. And I think that is how we need to understand it.
Now, the International Criminal Court issued arrest warrants for top Taliban leaders for gender violence against women and girls. But earlier, in the last months, they issued arrest warrants for the former defense secretary of Israel and the Prime Minister Netanyahu. The U.S. receiving him, not enforcing ICC warrant seeking his arrest for war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in Gaza. Of course, the U.S. is not a signatory to the International Criminal Court. But you have the U.N. Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and the Situation in the Occupied Palestinian Territory, Francesca Albanese, hitting out at countries that allowed Netanyahu to fly over their airspace en route to the United States, suggesting they may have flouted their obligations under international law. She said on Wednesday the governments of Italy, France, and Greece needed to explain why they provided safe passage to Netanyahu. Matt Duss, your response.
Yeah, I think Special Representative Albanese is right. And that is why there's a massive effort to defame her and to silence her. But I think her point is correct. Countries in Europe that have signed on to the International Criminal Court have a responsibility here, and they have failed in that responsibility. I would also add that by welcoming Netanyahu, by attacking the International Criminal Court, the Trump administration, as well as other European countries that are failing to honor that warrant, are undermining the work of the court more broadly. You mentioned the warrants against the Taliban leaders. I think those are appropriate. But those Taliban leaders who have now faced indictment for their abuse of women, they are the beneficiaries of this. They are the winners of Netanyahu being welcomed to the White House, just as Vladimir Putin is. Vladimir Putin faces a warrant from the ICC. He's a big winner here because you are undermining the work of the court. You're telling the world that we can just choose to ignore these warrants and these indictments when we choose. That really undermines the work to uphold a set of rules and norms regarding the protection of civilians here.
And I want to go to Putin in a minute and Trump's turnaround on the Russian invasion. But I want to ask you one last question. I want to go to a clip of Mike Huckabee, the U.S. ambassador to Israel. This is a recording obtained by CNN from 2016 when Huckabee was running for president. Listen carefully.
Basically, I mean, there really is no such thing as, and I have to be careful in saying this, because people will really get upset. There's really no such thing as a Palestinian. There's not.
There's no such thing as a Palestinian, Ambassador Huckabee said. Again, I want to quote that. He said, basically, there really is no such thing as, and I need to be careful saying this because people get really upset, there's really no such thing as Palestinians and has supported the annexation, Israel's annexation of the West Bank. So this goes to the meeting that apparently, or event that Netanyahu will be attending on his last night here tonight in Washington, D.C., with Jewish leaders and evangelical leaders. You know, there's Kufi, for example, the Christians United for Israel. I wanted to go to that meeting that they're going to be having. And the role of evangelicals, like Mike Huckabee, a leader of Zionist evangelicals, in supporting Israel. Matt, you personally know a lot about this.
Right. I mean, I am quite familiar with Huckabee's views on this and with the Christian evangelical Zionist view on this. This is part of the community that I grew up in. And I think this meeting tonight is very interesting for Netanyahu because this is his real base in the United States, is right-wing Christian evangelical Zionists. American Jews overwhelmingly vote for Democrats. They are overwhelmingly liberal. And a huge part of them support Palestinian liberation, a two-state solution, and do not support his government. Unfortunately, conservative Christian evangelicals, as you heard from Mike Huckabee, many of them simply don't recognize the Palestinians as a people with legitimate claims. They believe that Israel should control all of the land of Israel, even beyond Israel's current borders, as partly as a prerequisite for the second coming of Jesus Christ. That's part of the theology here. And these, I would also add, this in terms of numbers, this is the biggest part of the right-wing pro-Israel lobby in the United States. There are far more evangelical Christians than there are American Jews. And these organizations do a lot of the real on-the-ground lobbying in various states and various districts. And this is, as I said, this is Netanyahu's real political base here in the United States, and he is smart enough to understand that. But we should also understand that the policy they are supporting is deeply inhumane, it is destructive, and it is dangerous for everyone in the United States and in the region.
Matt Duss, before we go, I want to ask you about developments with Ukraine. Ukraine's Air Force says Russia launched its largest aerial attack overnight since its invasion in 2022, firing a record 741 drones and missiles, most of them targeting the city of Lutsk in western Ukraine. The barrage prompted Poland to activate its air defenses and scramble fighter jets. Russia's attack came after President Trump Tuesday sharply criticized Russian President Vladimir Putin, his latest in a series of U-turns on Ukraine policy.
We get a lot of bullshit thrown at us by Putin, for you want to know the truth. He's very nice all the time, but it turns out to be meaningless.
Trump Trump said the U.S. would now send additional weapons to Ukraine after the Pentagon last week halted arms shipments. It's being reported Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth did not inform the White House before he authorized the pause on weapon shipments to Ukraine. Apparently, he said he wanted to check if there were enough weapons for the U.S. to have, as well as sending to Ukraine. All of this comes as the first international court has found Moscow responsible for human rights abuses in Ukraine. Judges at the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg delivered two rulings against Russia today. In the first ruling, it found Russia violated international law during the conflict in Ukraine. It also ruled Russia was being behind the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 in 2014, which killed 298 people. Matt Duss, your former foreign policy advisor to Senator Bernie Sanders, your vice president of the Center for International Policy, explain what's going on here right now and the significance of Trump's